folks just be so free and it's just let loose. And then you see that fascination become a pathology because it becomes exacerbated and stereotyped. So you get the crazy stereotypes of the black woman who's sexually free,
right,
to the point of being promiscuous, the black male who is sexually free to the same point, and some of the other kinds of caricatures that actually come out of what is, and for many black folks, a natural way of being. Mm-hmm. So I think there is some correlation there. At some point, maybe we'll find out what really was driving Rachel Dolezal, mm-hmm, to have the kind of fascination with the black woman body. What would make her want to take this persona on to the point where she's disavowing herself from her biological family? And then what some would argue are all the privileges that go along with whiteness. What is so powerful about blackness that would make someone want to sacrifice that?
Well, it's also the power of whiteness that let her go back and sue,
absolutely,
Howard University.
That's right.
You know, as a white woman.
Right.
You know, Dr. Gapano, I want to thank you and your co-editor very much for this and all those who contributed. The book, again, is called Soul Thieves, The Appropriation and Misrepresentation of African-American Popular Culture. Thank you again for joining us at I Mix What I Like in the Real News Network.
Thank you for the invitation.
And thank you for joining us at I Mix What I Like in the Real News Network. And again, as Fred Hampton used to say, to you we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. Peace, everybody. Catch you in the whirlwind.
I wish I could tell him that I love him. I wish I could tell them that I love them, that we love them, but how could they believe us when they are caught between the enemy's prison systems and their own family's criticism? No one to counsel nor console. Where does a young tortured soul find its home? When they are molested for being too young and punished for getting grown, our love for them is so conditional. Our love for them is too conditional. But the condition is not conducive to our condemnation, picking at the faults like vultures, consuming the scattered leftovers once the beast has had his fill. Our sons emasculated and consequently overcompensating, and unbeknownst to them, they are just waiting for you to say, I love you. Not I love you but, not I love you if. When love is missed, love turns to myth. So why break your heart waiting for a myth? Why break your heart waiting for something that doesn't exist? Our love for them is so conditional. Our love for them is too conditional. I wish I could just tell them that we love them. I'm alive. I'm alive. But I deserve to die for the things I've said, for the times I've lied. But they lied when they said time flies. Time floats aimlessly and then time dies. A broken winged bird, a slave to gravity. A broken winged bird, a slave to reality. I'm alive, but I deserve to die for the souls I've stolen. Bodies broken, the hearts of my close kin crushed by my carelessness. But my family tree has been uprooted, and the broken branches of broken marriages lead me out on a limb that can barely support its own weight, like I can barely support my own kids, like I can barely keep my own crib. Ain't never had a piece of the pie, just pieces of crust that don't stick to the ribs, and I'm hungry again. Ain't nobody fed us since we were kids. So by the time he got hair on his chin, he had his ear to the street. By the time he had hair on his cheeks, he was carrying heat. By the time he got some bass in his voice box, he had rocks in his socks. Never played Pop Warner, but wrote recklessly and Pop Willie in the potholes and pitfalls of West Side Avenues. I'm dead. I'm alive. But he deserves to be alive. I should be the one to die for the promises I've broken. He was just searching the streets for a martyr token that would take him anywhere. Northbound platform towards elsewhere. The subterranean transit terminal we figured could be like Cinderella's pumpkin. Like Aladdin's carpet. Like Jay-Z's Cooper Shaq's truck. Cash, bucks, cake, cream, money, bread, flow, green. Do you blame the dreamer or the dream? The trap or the fiend? the parent or the teen. Even when I used to tell him that we came from kings, he gonna ask me if you ever seen a king with no bling. He said if we're royalty then we have got to shine, and if I gotta shine then I've got to grind, and if I've gotta grind then never mind all the extra you're talking, unless these shoes you walked in, or unless your chest my heart's in, unless you can guarantee that you'll hold my hand when it's dark and cold and hard and lonely and hungry, then you can't hear me, see me, be me, feel me, touch me, hug me, hold me, scold me, teach me, love me, be me. We see you young brothers caught on the hustle. Although you don't see it, just know that we love you. You're young, strong, and brave, and you were born for the struggle. Forgive us for our negligence. Know that we love you. We see you young brothers and you're caught in a hustle. I know you don't see it, but know that we love you. You're young, strong, and brave, and you were born for the struggle. Forgive us for our negligence. Know that we love you. We see you out there. Know that we love you. We see you in the prisons. Know that we love you. We see you on those corners. Know that we love you. We see you in those streets. Know that we love you. We see you in them juvies. Know that we love you. We see you on the battlefield. Know that we love you. We see you struggling. We see you hustling. We see you love. And know that we love you.
Attention comrades of Canadian DIY communities and underground art scenes.
This is our house, Weird Distro, the first and only not-for-profit online store for Canadian-made cassettes, LPs, CDs, and objet d'art.
One stop, one package, one massive country.
Run by Weird Canada volunteers.
For music to hold in your hands and your hearts, check out Weird Distro at distro.weirdcanada.com.
Hi, I'm Doug Blackwood. I've been hosting Seems Like Old Times for about 25 years now, featuring music and old radio 1930s to 50s. The show also focuses on issues and history-oriented subjects for older adults. If you know of something that would make a good topic of discussion, or would like to hear a piece of music or old radio show repeated, why not email me at seemslikeoldtimes@cfru.ca. Seems Like Old Times, Wednesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM.
Hi, I'm Dan Evans, and I volunteer at CFRU because it introduces me to amazing new ideas, and they're usually housed in amazing new people.
Hi, my name is Mina, and I volunteer on CFRU because I get to tell people about things that are going on in Canada that people wouldn't normally hear about.
My name is Kyle, and I volunteer at CFRU to connect with a wonderful group of diverse people.
If you would like to get involved with CFRU, contact Christopher at 519-824-4120, extension 58341, or volunteer at cfru.ca.
Okay, listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. Now, so I just played before, that was Amir Suleiman with Brother, and before that, of course, we had Jared Ball talking on Mix What I Like about Race and the Theft of the Soul. And just, you know, like, it's very, one of the things that he really said there, you know, about how, you know, there are white people who actually, like, want to appropriate African-American culture. Actually, there's a jealousy there, you know. I think that there's a lot of meaning there. Because it comes right down to it, whiteness is ultimately nothingness. You know, as Jared Ball says, as Tim Wise and other commentators have said, on some level, you know, white people are jealous of the community, culture, resilience of black people and other oppressed peoples of the Americas because it's something they don't have. you know, whiteness is a cultural construct. It's a set of privileges, you know, a vehicle of racial oppression meant to co-opt people of European descent and effectively steal their souls. So I'm really emphasizing right here, steal their souls. You know, white people are jealous of black people because, unlike them, we have lost our souls, which we gave up in order to become white in the first place when we emigrated and assimilated into the dominant group within the settler states of Canada and the United States. You know, the process was extended. You know, and Irish, Italians, Ukrainians, Russian Jews, and others faced long periods of discrimination by Anglo-Americans or Anglo-Canadians before they were considered quote-unquote normal white people and part of the system of racial apartheid in this hemisphere. But they paid a high price for this acceptance in the dominant culture. You know, they lost their culture, they lost their languages, they lost their spirit of resistance against class oppression and colonization and injustice. They lost their very history. You know, this was always given away in exchange for the chance to be an enforcer for the system rather than one of its victims. You know, my own family, at least on the Irish side of my family, has been in this country for 150 years. And I'm only slowly recovering my soul now. You know, recovering what it means to fight, you know, as a socialist. You know, returning to the history of my Irish people. You know, and the struggles against imperialism waged by my ancestors, whether that was in opposing the British Empire's hold on Ireland, struggling against the Roman Empire 2,000 years ago in Germany. History really has been my salvation. You know, opening my eyes to traditions that whiteness blinded me to for so long, and which didn't get talked about in school. You know, and I refuse to be an enforcer. I've said this before on the show, I'll say it again. I refuse to be an enforcer for the system of racial apartheid in this country that pits working people against one another. While the ruling class reaps greater and greater profits from our division and our weakness. See, I rebel. Liberation and redemption can only come through resistance. As people of European descent, we must essentially mutiny against a system that seeks to turn us into little monsters to beat down people of color. Tries to trick us into viewing them as the enemy. You know, as the crew of the battleship Potemkin demonstrated in Odessa Harbor in 1905, mutiny is a revolutionary act. And so this is what's demanded of us right now. You know, people of European descent in this hemisphere or settlers. What's demanded of us is mutiny. You know, and that's what I'm saying here. And like I said before, I've relearned so much of the culture that my ancestors had to give up when they were assimilated into this system. You know, and like I say, part of that culture resistance goes against, like, the British Empire, goes against the Roman Empire, even if you want to go back far enough. You know, and I'm proud to have recovered that and to be able, through relearning that, stand in solidarity with the oppressed peoples of this hemisphere, you know, and also fight for internationalism, liberation for everyone. It's what it's all about. Internationalism, solidarity between peoples, solidarity between nations, and self-determination. So really, this rootless tree called whiteness must fall. It has no roots. It has no basis. It ultimately has nothing that people can hold on to but oppression. You know, and ultimately it must fall. And I will be one of those people who make sure it does fall. You know, I've reached for my own roots. And these, my friends, are much more closer to my roots than anything that the education system in this country has ever told me. This is called the Song of Siegfried. You might ask why I even use the name Siegfried on this show. But this comes from my ancestry, my ancestors who opposed the Roman Empire trying to colonize Germany 2,000 years ago. And these were the words that my own ancestors said when they said in no uncertain terms, "We are not Romans. We will not become like you. We will fight for our independence, for our self-determination, for our souls." So this is the Song of Siegfried, the song that came out of those ancient struggles. "Born in the heart of the forge, to gnaw on wood, black charcoal, redden in the bellows gust, smelt iron and bronze, end in cinders, scattered, son of flames. Whence came I? I am not like you. To dig for my roots, kiss the sky, wed the sun, tremble in the wind, and perish under the axe. Son of ash trees, whence came I? I am not like you. To hunt with my brothers side by side, run beneath the copses, bring the game to bay. Scratch, bite, a face all in blood. Cover the gray she-wolf, die. Throat slit by my son of the wolf pack. Whence came I? I am not like you. Born of earth and lightning. To forge myself, tempered in the storm. Split bronze, iron, ancient arms, be victory and glory. A king's blade, son of steel. You hide where I came from. I am not like you." That is my message to all imperialists. You tried to hide where I came from. You tried to hide where I came from through this lie of whiteness. And I want to tell you right now, I have recovered so much of the past that you've tried to keep from me. You know? So I'm telling you, imperialists, my enemies, I am not like you. And I will not be your tool in oppressing others. You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Wardruna with Rootless Tree Fell, Rootless Tree Falls. And that's a Norse, it's an old Norse song, actually, is what that is. So, like, once again, like I said, I'm reclaiming this this past that I lost, you know, and, like, you know, this is part of it. Finding out more about this kind of, this culture, which we so often lose, of course, when we come to this this part of the world. So, one of the things I did talk about in past shows, and I think I want to expand on this right now, I did talk about how this one guy that I know who is in Workers' World Party down in New York City, how he was on a flotilla of aid ships that went down to Yemen, the country of Yemen, which is, of course, being bombed by Saudi Arabia right now with the assistance of the United States, active support of the United States, actually. And what he went through there, he sent some reports back on Press TV about the kind of stuff he was going through, the kind of challenges he faced, how they bombed the port that he was going to prevent the aid ship from docking, you know, and apparently went even further than that. You know, he's this next clip I'm going to play, actually, is Caleb Maupin giving a report back on all his experiences in Yemen. You know, now he's back in the United States. And this is the report which he gave to Workers' World Party about the situation in Yemen, where, of course, the people there are fighting against imperialism. You know, American imperialism acting basically through Saudi Arabia. And just what he experienced, you know. And once again, like I was talking about internationalism, this is also an example of that. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Room would consider ourselves to be revolutionaries. So, most of us, if not all of us in this room, would consider ourselves to be revolutionaries. We've chosen to spend our lives fighting against injustice, trying to build a new world. Now, it's easy to say that you're a revolutionary, but if you're serious about being a revolutionary, one thing you absolutely must do is study. Revolutionaries must be constantly studying the strategy and tactics of fighting against oppression. They do this to develop new methods for defeating the oppressors and winning victories for the people. Though it's very important, you can't simply study the revolutions of the past. One of the primary things that serious revolutionaries should be doing is studying the revolutions that are currently taking place, observing them, learning from them, and figuring out what lessons can be applied. Now, because I consider myself to be a revolutionary, I was very excited to return to the Middle East. This is a region of the world where lots of revolutions are currently happening, and there are a lot of great opportunities to see revolutions up close in action and learn from them. In the Middle East right now, the people of Bahrain are rising up against the U.S.-backed king. The Palestinians continue to heroically fight back against Zionist Israel. The people of Syria are coming together to defeat a campaign of foreign-backed extremists. Shia Muslims in Iraq are forming militias to protect their communities. The people of Lebanon are defending themselves with community organizations, exercising people's power. There's lots of revolution that's going on in the Middle East. Now, I was out of the country for 33 days. I spent a lot of time in Iran. I actually spent some time in the North African country of Djibouti. I also spent a very uncomfortable 12 hours in Abu Dhabi, where I was detained by U.S. Customs. But the focus of my talk tonight is actually going to be on the one country I didn't get to, which is Yemen. I tried my best to get to Yemen. I spent 13 days on a ship chartered by the Red Crescent Society of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The ship was called the Iran Shahid, and it was loaded with over 2,500 tons of humanitarian aid for the people of Yemen. The boat had nothing on it but medical supplies, flour, canned food, and water. On the ship were 50 people. Among them were surgeons, anesthesiologists, general practitioners, the technicians of an operating theater, nurses, as well as the technicians of anesthesiology. All of them were volunteers from the Red Crescent Society of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they wanted to get to Yemen, a war-torn country on the Arabian Peninsula, and help the people in need. We departed from Bandar Abbas, a port city in southern Iran. We intended to reach Hodeidah, a port on the eastern side of Yemen on the Red Sea. Now, we did not complete our mission. Why? Well, there's really only one reason we didn't complete our mission, and that is U.S.-backed Saudi terrorism. On May 14th, the day we were scheduled to arrive in Hodeidah, the Saudi military bombed the port 8 times in a single day. Dock workers were killed. Within the next few days, press reports described Hodeidah as being completely demolished. Furthermore, 15 Sudanese mercenaries in Yemen had positioned themselves around the port. These men, paid by the Saudis, were set up and in position so that when we arrived in Hodeidah, they would open fire on our ship with rocket launchers and kill everyone on board. Now, lucky enough for us, our cargo ship was overloaded. The engine kept overheating, forcing us to go at a much slower pace than we expected. And because we were going so slow and didn't get there when we expected, we didn't arrive on May 14th, and we did not end up encountering what the Saudis had in store for us. After the events of May 14th and negotiations that took place in Tehran, it was determined that our mission and our ship, we couldn't finish. We couldn't go to Hodeidah, and we ended up going to Djibouti, and then from there I flew back to Tehran. I was certainly disappointed that I wasn't able to get to Yemen, but the disappointment that I felt was nothing compared to the disappointment felt by the volunteers from the Red Crescent Society. These men wanted to get to Yemen and help the people who were in need. The men from the Red Crescent Society are some of the bravest human beings I've ever met. They've been to Iraq, Afghanistan, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Rwanda, and so many other parts of the world. They've taken great risks to help people who are in need. One of the volunteers, actually, I talked to had actually been to Iraq and was captured and was held captive by an armed grouping in Iraq and spent months as a captive before he was able to escape. These men wanted to get to Yemen and help the people because they're from Iran, and Iranian TV, unlike U.S. television, is telling people what's actually happening in Yemen. Right now in Yemen, hospitals, schools, mosques, power plants, and all kinds of civilian infrastructure is being bombed by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has the fourth largest military in the world, and it is bombing Yemen, the poorest country in the region and one of the poorest countries in the world. Iranians know all about it, but U.S. media is saying almost nothing. You can watch CNN, MSNBC, and Fox for hours and hours and not hear the word Yemen mentioned a single time. The media blackout is even more shocking when you realize that this isn't simply a Saudi attack, but in reality, the bombing of Yemen is a U.S.-directed military operation. The Saudi airplanes that are bombing Yemen are being refueled by the U.S. Air Force. U.S. satellites are providing information and directing the Saudis in where to attack in Yemen. The U.S. military leaders in Saudi Arabia are consulting with the Saudi military before they carry out their strikes. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, with the fourth largest military budget in the world, purchases almost all of its weapons from the United States. Raytheon, General Electric, Boeing, and all the big military contractors are making loads of money from Saudi Arabia's attack on Yemen. The government of the United States, via its proxy in Saudi Arabia, has basically declared war on Yemen, and over 4,000 people are already dead. Now, the U.S. media is saying almost nothing, and the people here have no idea that it's going on. And in the rare instances that the U.S. media does mention what's happening in Yemen, the terms they use are very confusing. The reports will talk about Houthi rebels and tribal factions and do everything they can to make it sound very confusing and like something that we just can't get here. You know, this is a complicated thing in another country. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Well, what's happening in Yemen is really not that confusing and complicated. It's rather simple. The Yemeni people, from many different religious, ethnic, and tribal backgrounds, have come together to demand control of their country and its resources. The Saudi kingdom, a giant Wall Street plantation, is unleashing all the forces of destruction, killing as many people as they can in order to stop this and keep Yemen under their control. So since the early 1990s, Yemen has basically been under the control of Saudi Arabia. For a long time, Yemen had a dictator named Saleh, who was basically an agent of the Saudis. In order to keep their control, Wall Street and the Saudis worked to divide the country. They played one tribal or religious group against another. The U.S. drone strike program, allegedly done to suppress al-Qaeda, has been working to further destabilize the country. The people live in terror. They can't walk the streets without fear there might be a drone strike. Under the Saudi-controlled regime, one group that was singled out for discrimination and oppression was the Zaydis. This is Shia Muslims who live in the northern part of the country. Shia Muslims were banned from having any job that didn't involve manual labor. Its members were forbidden from having their own schools. Often their right to even conduct their own religious services was threatened. The U.S. Congress described the way Shias are treated in Saudi-aligned regimes as religious apartheid. Children in school all throughout Saudi-aligned countries, including Yemen when it was under Saudi dominion, they're taught that Shia Muslims are apostates and that their religion is just a, quote, Jewish conspiracy against the Saudi king. That's the level of hate that's it's issued against Shias. Now, in response to the routine discrimination and oppression, the Shias in Yemen formed a religious organization to fight for their rights. The group calls itself Ansar Allah. Now, the U.S. media, they call them Houthis. We've all heard this term, Houthis. That's a derogatory tribal term. Ansar Allah has Yemenis of many different tribal and religious backgrounds, or tribal backgrounds within its ranks. Much like the Black Panther Party once did in this country, Ansar Allah in Yemen provides food, summer camps, schools, and other essential services to the impoverished Shia communities. The organization was forced to take up arms to defend themselves after the U.S.-backed Saudi government began to suppress them. Now, in 2011, you remember the Arab Spring? In 2011, just like in Egypt, Tunisia, and many other countries, people in Yemen rebelled. The U.S.-Saudi-backed dictator, Saleh, was forced to step down, and Yemen began a national dialogue. Many tribal and religious groups of the country came together and began to discuss and debate how to make their country better. Community assemblies were formed. Yemenis started talking and debating about how to develop the economy and how much they hated the fact that their country was dominated by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. The revolutionaries in Ansar Allah participated in this national dialogue and formed many alliances across the country. During the 2011 events, Ansar Allah won the respect of many Yemenis for their bravery and their organizational expertise during the 2011 uprising. Now, Shias... I want to have some water. It's interesting to note that Shias, now the most oppressed people in Yemen, they really were the backbone of this uprising that took place in 2011. And this isn't really a surprise to us in Workers' World Party. We know that it's always the leaders of the most oppressed that have the ability to push forward everyone in the struggle for justice. And this is one of the principal beliefs of Workers' World Party. Mm-hmm. And after a year or so, the national dialogue that took place, this broad dialogue in Yemen, it was actually terminated. A fake election was staged with only one candidate on the ballot. Mansour Hadi, a Saudi agent, was declared the president, and the hopes that had sprung up all throughout the country in 2011 in this mass revolt were crushed. However, there was one, the Ansar Allah organization, the Arab Spring Party, the various Sunni, Shia, and secular groups that all been part of the national dialogue and the uprising, they refused to accept the termination of this. They refused to accept this. In response to the violent suppression of their continued protests, they picked up the gun and formed a United Revolutionary Coalition. The armed campaign began in the countryside. The revolutionaries carved out liberated territories and base areas in the northern part of the country. They made alliances and they negotiated with different strata of the country, gradually getting militarily and politically stronger. And finally, in the early months of 2015, they marched into the capital and triumphantly seized the government buildings. They kicked out the Saudi puppet dictator, Mansour Hadi, and they formed a people's committee to govern the country. They've begun to write a new constitution. Popular assemblies and militias supporting the new revolutionary government have been formed all across the country. And it was in response to this victory of a massive popular uprising that the Saudis have launched their horrendous bombing campaign. The Saudis want to suppress this mass anti-imperialist uprising and keep Yemen within their clutches. I mentioned earlier that Yemen is one of the poorest countries in the region, and this is technically true, but it doesn't have to be so. They've just discovered that Yemen actually has one of the most vast untapped oil deposits in the region. It has a huge, huge deposit of oil. But this oil is in the ground. It isn't being extracted, it's not being refined, and it's not being sold. Yemen's oil is in the ground, and the people remain poor. What the Saudis, Wall Street, and everyone else knows is that the unfolding revolution in Yemen could change that. A new government in Yemen could nationalize the oil resources. Yemen could go from being an impoverished and divided country to being something like Venezuela or Iran, where the public control of natural resources funds the development of an independent economy. The Pentagon and the Saudis are bombing Yemen for one reason, to keep it poor. They are bombing in order to keep Yemen an impoverished, divided, and controlled society. Now, the U.S. media, they always bring up this allegation that Iran is funding Ansar Allah. Now, no proof of this has ever been delivered, and in fact, the UN Undersecretary General just confirmed in an interview with Al Jazeera that absolutely no evidence of that exists. The U.S. media often uses phrases like Iranian proxies or Iranian agents to describe the revolutionary forces in Yemen. This is beyond insulting and disrespectful. Are we to believe that the only reason the people of Yemen want to control their country and not be slaves anymore is because of Iran? Reminds me of how the U.S. media at one point said Martin Luther King Jr. was a Soviet agent. It couldn't be that black people wanted civil rights. Oh, no. Oh, no. It had to be they were getting orders from Moscow. That was the message of a lot of the U.S. media at the time. In a BBC interview, when asked about being funded by Iran, a leader of Ansarullah said that the only reason the media mentions Iran is to sow sectarian religious division. He said that, yes, they are inspired by the Iranian revolution, but they're also greatly inspired by what's happening in Venezuela. He said, quote, "There are no borders in our struggle. We stand with the oppressed everywhere in the world." Now, the Ansarullah organization says a true imam is a fighting imam. They argue that a religious leader is not genuine unless he picks up a sword or a gun and fights for the oppressed. The reason Ansarullah fighters wave their guns at rallies, they'll show this sometime, they'll show them waving their guns around at rallies. The reason they do that is because guns have a religious significance for them. They believe that it's the duty of a man to have a weapon to protect his household, and it's actually a religious belief of theirs that everyone should be armed. The official logo of the Ansarullah organization actually shows a hand holding a rifle, and that represents the right to armed self-defense. But it also shows a shaft of wheat. It's perpendicular to the rifle. There's a shaft of wheat. And that shaft of wheat represents economic development. This logo, which you hear nothing about, is actually what Wall Street is afraid of. They fear that Yemen could become another economically independent country like Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, Russia, or China. An independent, prosperous Yemen could be part of the global axis of resistance. Now, I must say, I'm somewhat disappointed by some of the communications I received from some young revolutionaries here in the U.S. while I was in Yemen. Now, we're all learning. I've said many dumb things on the internet before that I hope no one finds out about. But there were so many young revolutionaries that felt a need to send me Facebook messages and emails while I was in Iran, informing me, as if I didn't know, that the Islamic Republic of Iran are not communists. Well, this is blatantly obvious, but it's irrelevant. I don't support the Islamic Republic of Iran because they're communists. Malcolm X wasn't a communist. Cesar Chavez wasn't a communist. John Brown wasn't a communist. If you have an ideological criteria or a checklist for who you will stand with against imperialism, you aren't going to get very far in the real world. That's just a fact. I've taken great risks and stood shoulder to shoulder with many people I strongly disagree with at Occupy Wall Street protests and at Black Lives Matter protests, and I'll do the same internationally. When a country breaks free from Wall Street and begins a course of independent economic development, this generally has good results. When I was on the ship, I had many conversations with the Red Crescent Society volunteers. I remember we were talking about medical care, and I talked about how in the U.S. people will often lose their houses or cars because of health care costs. And they said to me, well, that's because they want to go to like a special private hospital or something. I said, no, that's even at public hospitals, people have these medical bills, and they just couldn't believe that. In Iran, the Ministry of Health provides everyone with basic health care. If you want plastic surgery or something expensive, you might have to pay for it, but any necessary health care is covered by the Ministry of Health. And we talked about education. And I said, in the U.S., people, you know, students will spend years in debt paying for their education. And they said, well, yeah, but that's because you want to go to some really expensive private university, right? And I said, no, even at public universities, education is extremely expensive. And they said they couldn't believe that. In Iran, universities education is free for anyone who passes the entrance exam. And in fact, right now, 60% of those enrolled in Iranian universities are women. You know, let's talk about that. They were very shocked to learn that though the United States is very wealthy, we still have millions of people who sleep on the streets every night. And they were even more shocked to learn that the majority of the people in the U.S. that are homeless are actually military veterans. The Iranian Revolution of 1979 kicked the imperialist bankers out of the country. The nationalized oil resources, under the control of an anti-imperialist government, have resulted in the creation of a vibrant national economy. I saw Iran's leader, Ali Syed Khamenei, speak at a mass rally on June 4th. In his speech, this is a direct quote from the speech, and it was just such a moving experience to see him speak, but one of the things he said is, he said, "We oppose the crimes of ISIS, as well as the crimes of the federal police of the United States. They're both the same." I'll tell you, at this mass rally, at the it was held at the mausoleum of Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic, and I saw thousands of working-class Iranians just screaming in adoration for their leader and for their continuing revolution. When Khamenei walked out to the balcony, all the young men in the audience extended their hands to him, and they shouted, "The blood in my vessels belongs to the supreme leader," meaning that they would die for the revolution. That's what they were shouting. I was just moved to tears by it, and I looked out at this crowd, and, you know, I sat with a section, there were a lot of, like, diplomats and politicians, and they were calmer. The people who were screaming in adoration for the leader and screaming in support of the revolution, it was the working class people. It was people who'd bust in from the countryside all over Iran to see the leader of their country, and it was just like something I'd never seen before. And when I looked out on that crowd, I'd been made aware of the fact that before the 1979 revolution, the overwhelming majority of these people never would have had running water. They never would have had electricity. By breaking Iran out of Wall Street's empire, the Islamic Revolution provided the Iranian people with a standard of living higher than most people in the region. In fact, it's because of the 1979 revolution that Iran has such a big bourgeoisie. The anti-imperialist revolution, led by leaders who denounced capitalism, created the economic basis for a lot of Iranians to open businesses and become capitalists. And ironically, it's this new Iranian bourgeoisie, these new Iranian capitalists, created by the revolution, they're the ones aligned with the U.S. that make up most of the so-called opposition. It's kind of interesting. They wouldn't have their wealth if it wasn't for the revolution, but now they align with the U.S. against it. Now, the leaders of the Islamic Revolution, I had to explain this. There were members of my family when they heard I was going to Iran, and they said, "Oh, that's a Muslim country. Aren't they ISIS? That's part of Iran, right?" Well, I had to explain, the leaders of the Islamic Republic of Iran are nothing like ISIS. Why? ISIS are terrorists, and the Iranian leaders are anti-imperialist revolutionaries. And there's a big difference between a terrorist and a revolutionary. If you want to know what terrorism is, go see the next Hollywood superhero movie. So many movies come out in the U.S. showing some young white guy who thinks the police aren't doing enough or has some other grievance against the world, so all alone he puts on a cape and a mask and goes out to fight the bad guys. That's the terrorist mentality, trying to save the world with isolated acts of gruesome violence designed to grab attention and terrify people. That's terrorism. Terrorism isn't something done by the poor. Terrorism is a strategy and a method that has been developed and utilized by the richest and most powerful people on Earth in order to keep the bulk of the human race subservient to them. Now, the U.S. leaders claim that they're fighting ISIS. But interestingly, let's take a little deeper look, because all the people ISIS are attacking so conveniently happen to be people the U.S. is also attacking. ISIS is attacking the Shia community in Iraq, which is sympathetic to Iran. They are fighting to overthrow the Syrian government. The U.S. is also trying to overthrow the Syrian government. In Yemen, the Saudi monarchy, the United States, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda are all united against the People's Revolution. ISIS has actually declared directly, this is a direct quote, "God has commanded us never to attack Israel." The money funding ISIS activities originated within Saudi banks. The owners of Twitter actually recently reported that the overwhelming majority of social media activity supporting ISIS comes from Turkey, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, all U.S.-aligned countries. The Syrian government has just recently provided documentation that all the weapons that are going to ISIS are coming through Syria from Turkey, another U.S.-aligned country. The reality is, despite the harsh words of U.S. leaders, ISIS is very convenient for the Pentagon and for the billionaires who control them. ISIS commits their horrific, gruesome acts of violence, and this serves to help justify the drone strike program and the continued escalation of U.S. military presence in the region. The U.S. ISIS serves to terrify the U.S. public and feed into anti-Islamic bigotry. Wall Street loves the terrorists in ISIS. If you want a clear example of terrorism, this is one, and this is something that struck me. It's something I'm still kind of processing. I don't quite know how to react to it. 3 days after our mission to Yemen was aborted, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia bombed the medical university in Hodeida. The city we intended to arrive in, Hodeida, there's a medical university there, and there were 12 students who were doing nothing but sitting in class. They were learning to become doctors and nurses as they saw their country being destroyed, and they were killed. And this attack that killed 12 innocent students was a retaliation against the Red Crescent Society of Yemen for cooperating with the Red Crescent Society of Iran to conduct the mission. The Saudis are committing cold-blooded murder every day, trying to suppress a popular struggle for democracy and independence, and the U.S. government is complicit. And we need to figure out what we can do as activists to stop what the Saudis are doing. Like I mentioned before, there's a big difference between a terrorist and a revolutionary. In the U.S., it's the Ku Klux Klan, the anti-immigrant Minutemen, George Zimmerman, and this crazed fascist in South Carolina who are the terrorists, trying to suppress black and brown people as they struggle for equality. But unlike the terrorists, the Black Panther Party, the Deacons for Defense, the People's Powers Assemblies, these are revolutionaries. Revolutionaries are people who bring people together to stand arm in arm as sisters and brothers to defend themselves and their communities. Revolutionaries may sometimes have to use violence, but they prefer not to. Revolutionaries are driven by a vision of building a better world, not keeping in place dying institutions and tyrants of the past. Revolution is always an act of self-defense. Unlike the terrorists, the strength of revolutionary leaders isn't what they do themselves, but what they unleash other people to do. Revolutionaries don't terrify people and make them feel powerless, but instead they help people to find strength within themselves to do things they never thought they were capable of. Yes, there's a clear difference between revolutionaries and terrorists. The battle taking place today, not just in the Middle East, not just on the streets of Baltimore, but on a global level, can really be described as a gigantic battle between terrorism and revolution. The age of Wall Street and the London Stock Exchange is over. Humanity is rising up in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia, and elsewhere to reject the rule of the dollar. The revolutionaries are not identical. Some are communists, like in Cuba, China, and People's Korea. Some are Bolivarian socialists, like in Venezuela, Ecuador, and Bolivia. There are Islamic revolutionaries in the Middle East. There are secular nationalists in Russia and Syria. The revolutionaries of the world have different perspectives and histories, but they agree on one thing: down with U.S. imperialism. They have all refused to accept a world ruled by a small group of Western bankers. The only response of the rulers to this broad uprising is terrorism. The terrorism of the Saudis in Yemen, the terrorism of the Kiev regime in East Ukraine, the terrorism of the fascist thug in South Carolina, the terrorism of police brutality on a daily basis, these are all part of a global campaign of violence designed to prevent history from marching forward. We, the young people of the United States, have proved that though we're very far behind our friends in the rest of the world, we too are capable of becoming revolutionaries. Polls, and more importantly, massive protests and demonstrations, are showing that this generation is waking up. Facing the disastrous low-wage economy, young people here in the United States are starting to reject the system of global monopoly capitalism. The response of the billionaires is an escalation of the rising police state. They are creating a regime of terrorism right here at home in order to force us to accept an economy of short-term, low-paying jobs. Right now, Congress is working to pass yet another global trade package to strip away any protections that exist and put more power directly into the hands of the criminal cartels of international finance. The puppet leaders of the United States, just like the puppets in Saudi Arabia and the puppets in Tel Aviv, have no real loyalties of any kind. They're happy to starve hungry children in the Bronx, just like they're happy to destroy innocent children with drone strikes. What the ruling global elite are very afraid of right now is that the people of the United States will begin to discover their own history. They're afraid that we'll learn about Nat Turner and John Brown. They're afraid that we'll discover the legacy of sit-down strikes and unemployment councils. They are terrified that we'll discover that it's not just the blood of racist settlers, cowboys, and slave owners that pumps through our veins, but that we, the people of the United States, indeed have a real heritage of resistance. When Bush and Obama and all the other officials in the U.S. who talk about a war on terror, when they talk about this war on terror, they're lying. It's the people's revolution of men and women, old and young, people from all across the planet, standing together to protect each other and demand a better world. It's the war to overthrow imperialism. This is the real war against terrorism, and I have no doubt that it will be victorious.
Seldom travel by the multitude. The devil's devil has a couple fools. My culture's screwed, cause this word is misconstrued. Small countries exempt from food, cause leaders have different views.
You choose.
What mean the world to me is being free. Live and let live and just let it be.
Let it be.
Love, peace, and harmony. One universal family. One God, one aim, and one destiny.
Oh yeah. Imagine life without a choice at all. Giving a vote without a voice at all. These be the problems that we face. I'm talking poverty and race, but no matter what the case, we gotta
hold on to this feeling. Freedom, freedom. Let's hold on to this feeling. Freedom, freedom.
Yo, I'm the first candidate to hate. Had to beat on the drum to communicate. But what was to come to those who were hung? They would decapitate the tongue if you would mention the word
freedom. Got people screaming, free Bumia Jamal. But two out of three of y'all will probably be at the mall. I'm heated with y'all, the defeated will fall. Incomplete and unsolved when the word freedom's involved.
Yo, my forefathers hung in trees to be free.
Rest in peace.
Got rid of slavery but still kept the penitentiary. And now freedom got a shotgun and shells with your name. Release the hot ones and let freedom
ring.
I'm a
former boat prisoner, Hollywood visitor. Dance for cats, segregated on wax. My color got me handy. Cap, Anus, and Andy. For the freedom, they just won't hand me.
Hold on to this feeling.
So true and it been hurting so long.
Feeling.
That's the reason why we named this song.
Freedom.
Cause it's not a lot of time. Your heart, body, soul, and your mind. It's so true and it been hurting so long.
Feeling.
That's the reason why we named this song.
Freedom.
Hey, my name's Andrew. I volunteer and have a show here at CFRU. Hopefully you can too.
Kultrun World Music Festival is happening this summer in Kitchener from July 9th to July 12th, with free performances and events throughout the weekend. The festival is the Tri-City's only family-friendly celebration of diversity and will be the only satellite celebration of the Pan Am and Parapan Games, featuring Ana Tiju, Chico Trujillo, Los Banban, Lucho Quequesana, and much more. There will also be all-ages interactive activities, workshops, storytelling, theater, and food and craft market. Come say hi to the CFRU crew who will be broadcasting live on location during the festival. This year's festival will be held on the green grounds of Victoria Park, a physically accessible location. For more information, visit nerudaarts.ca. Remember, that's this summer in KW from July 9th to July 12th. Ahí nos vemos!
Close to Home. An eclectic mix of Canadian music on CFRU 93.3 FM, Thursday mornings at 7 a.m. with your host, Tom Rydell. I'll even play that different Canadian song that you won't hear anywhere else on the radio. Close to Home, Thursday mornings, 7 a.m.
Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. This spring, the Guelph Community Singers, a fun-loving, accessible, secular choir for adults, will be exploring life's greetings and goodbyes in its new spring concert, taking place 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, May 30th at Trinity United Church on 400 Stevenson Street North. Singing everything from pop classics to Italian madrigals, the group will also be joined by the Trillium Waldorf School Choir. Come for a listen, and perhaps you'll want to join this unauditioned group next fall. Concert tickets are $10 in advance at Flower Barrel at 115 Wyndham North, $15 at the door, $5 for children, $30 for families. That's the Guelph Community Singers' new spring concert, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, May 30th, at 400 Stevenson Street North, a physically accessible location.
They sold us to shit, now we're sick to death. It's a slow-mo bomb, don't hit the deck. The frog star now, how to pose a threat. Sitting still like the pose in the sofa set. Got the kids on meds and moms off the breast. Stress cracks in the crust, they pass the buck. The corrupt from the past to the future truck. The hugest chunks of poop, fruits, and junk. Pump that shit for the mass consumption. Production, taking a massive dump. Then the whole world's flat from capital lust. And trust that they fuck with the stats and stuff. They lie from the side to the back to front. I said, holy shit, just how big are we supposed to get? Yet, growth protect the gross and the net. Just how big are we supposed to get? Yet, I said, holy shit, and just how big are we supposed to get? Growth protect the gross and the net, and yet, yeah. You need to grow for the rest to waste. It's so fast, no chance it will slow the pace. There's no way, say masters of market fate. Backslide might cause a collapse as they pass the plate. They're ticking like the Catholic faith, cap and trade. You know the growth gon' get paid. And how long do we gon' reach the phase of when each man faced with the same starvation? And ignorance ain't bliss, it's complacence. Work on this shit, grins on our faces. Every last drop rot from nations. Boys under board can stand an ovation for it. Ha, I said, holy shit, just how big are we supposed to get? Yet, growth protect the gross and the net. Just how big are we supposed to get? Yet, ha, I said, holy shit, and just how big are we supposed to get? Growth protect the gross and the net. And yet, yeah. They need the growth to protect their asses. Cause the lack of the growth in the market crash. Splash, the text in the news they flash. The masses are stressed by a mass collapse. Yeah, they measure growth from the trees they slash. The hills that they blast from mining shafts. And like the bombs dropped on Iraq, they got contracts for jets, boats, and gas. And they measure growth from the oldest math. They add and they add and they don't subtract. No tax when they take and they rape and slash. They raking all the coals with the souls they get. Yeah, growth poses pro bowler cap. Throws its weight all over the map. And a lot of profit from aftermath. They got them counting the stacks off our collapse. Yeah, I said, holy shit, just how big are we supposed to get? Yet, growth protect the gross and the net. Just how big are we supposed to get? Yet, I said, holy shit, and just how big are we supposed to get? Growth protect the gross and the net. And yet, we're living too large. I said, we're living too large. We're living too large. I say we're living too large. Lord. Yeah. 1, 2, 1, 2. Flow combat, be I born that beaches, storm that, reformat the masses. I'm redrafting the battle maps at top of task list. I build a classic boom bap blast, bazooka rap shit. I'm sending heads into backspin, attack with wind at the back, plus vernaculars to dig it back by facts. Packed with the stat charts and graphs, I got passion.
fashion. Burn mics up to ashes. I make flashes, crap their pants, stanzas, cure cultural cancer. I got tunes that move you to dance. Burn flags, anthem, throw a tantrum. Getting out of hand with these random acting tactics against the axis. My